This is a reading from the Mahabharata, chapter 22. Part 1. Dhritarashtra hears from Vidura how the Pandavas exited. When the Pandavas were gone, Dhritarashtra became prey to anxiety. Thinking of the dangers awaiting his sons, he could not enjoy peace of mind. He brooded in his rooms for some time. Then he called for Vidura. When his brother arrived, the king timidly asked, "I desire to hear how Yudhishthira and his brothers left the city. How did Draupadi proceed? What was the exalted Daumya doing as they left the city?" Vidura replied, "Yudhishthira walked with his face covered by a cloth. Bhima was looking at his mighty arms, and Arjuna was scattering the sand as he walked. Sahadev smeared his face with dirt, and Nakula covered his body with ashes. The lotus-eyed Draupadi followed them, with her face bathed in tears and her hair disheveled. Daumya walked before them carrying kushagrass and uttering fearful mantras from the Samaveda relating to Yamaraj. Intrigued by this description, Dhritarashtra inquired further, "Tell me, why have they assumed these various guises, O Vidura?" "Although your sons persecuted him and deprived him of his kingdom by foul means, the wise Dhammaraj has not deviated from the path of virtue. Thus he covered his face, thinking, 'I may consume innocent citizens by looking at them. I may consume them with my eyes made fearful by anger.' Bhima strode forth from the city, repeatedly stretching his arms and thinking how no one could equal him in strength. He desires to do to his enemies acts worthy of those arms. Arjuna, who is capable of drawing his bow with both hands, scattered the sand in order to symbolize the countless arrows he will let loose in the battle. Sahadev smeared his face, thinking, 'No one should recognize me in this hour of calamity.' And the incomparably handsome Nakula covered himself with ashes, thinking, 'I should not steal the hearts of women as I walk exposed along the public highway.' Hearing of Bhima and Arjuna's belligerence, the blind king became even more fearful. What would become of Duryodhan and his brothers now? Dhritarashtra listened with growing concern. Vidura then continued his description. The chaste Draupadi, attired in a single cloth, her hair bedraggled due to Dushasan's touch, went along saying that the wives of those who have reduced me to this plight will, in 14 years from now, will all have to lament as I myself am lamenting. Bereft of their husbands and sons, they will enter the city by this same road, having offered oblations of water to their dead relatives at the river. O Dhritarashtra, the learned and self-controlled Daumya, holding blades of Kusha grass pointed southwards, uttered the Samaveda, thinking, when all the Kauravas are killed, their priests will sing these very same mantras. Part 2. Narada foretells the future. Vidura told the king how Hastinapur's citizens were condemning the Kuru chiefs and wailing with sorrow. While the brothers were leaving, everyone saw many evil omens. Lightning flashed from a cloudless sky, and the earth trembled. The sun was eclipsed, and meteors fell. Jackals yelped from all directions, and vultures and ravens shrieked from the temples of the gods. Vidura then said, "All these signs portend the destruction of our race, O king. This is only the result of your own evil desires, my dear brother." Vidura looked at Dhritarashtra. He sat wringing his hands and was saying nothing. Just at that moment, the great Rishi Narada suddenly appeared. Surrounded by other powerful sages, he stood before King Dhritarashtra and said gravely, "On the 14th year from today, for Duryodhan's fault alone, Bhima and Arjuna will destroy all the Kauravas." After saying this, Narada rose upwards into the sky with the other rishis and disappeared. All the Kurus were gripped with fear. Narada's words could not prove false. Seeing war as inevitable, Duryodhan, Karna, and Shukuni all approached Drona to offer him command of the army. Drona said, "The Brahmins have foretold that the Pandavas are of divine origin and they cannot be killed. Out of fear of those heroes, however, you have sought my shelter, and I cannot refuse. Destiny is supreme, however. Therefore, I shall do everything in my power to protect you. Even though the Pandavas are allied with the Drupada, whose son was born to kill me, thus I too must be about to die. O Kurus, enjoy life while you can. Offer sacrifice and give charity freely. For at the end of 14 years, calamity will overtake us all." Drona spoke within Dhritarashtra's hearing. The old king found himself more and more anxious as he thought of the injustice for which he had been responsible. Now his son had everything he wanted, but how long could it last? Enmity with the Pandavas would be dangerous even for the demigods. Part 3. The king calls for his secretary. Dhritarashtra's thoughts went back to the day Duryodhan was born. Why had he not then listened to Vidura's advice? Even then, his affection for his son had overpowered all his judgment and reasoning. Now, Dhritarashtra was about to face the consequences for his sentimental weakness. The king thus called for his secretary, Sanjay. Although he was a charioteer and a Sudra by birth, he was the disciple of Vyasadeva, and he was Dhritarashtra's own friend. Sanjaya had often been able to console Dhritarashtra with his wisdom. When Sanjaya arrived, he saw the king sitting with his head bowed down, and he was sighing repeatedly. With a wry smile, the charioteer Sanjaya said, "O king, you have now obtained the whole earth and all its wealth. Why then do you grieve?" Dhritarashtra shook his head. "What do they not have to grieve for, who will have to meet in battle those foremost of fighters, the Pandavas?" Sanjaya spoke frankly. "This, O king, is your own fault. You have created a hostility which will destroy the world. Although Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura condemned Duryodhana's behavior, your wicked son had the beloved and virtuous Draupadi dragged into the assembly hall and cruelly insulted. Why did you not check him? Surely the gods deprived that man of reason to whom they have ordained defeat and disgrace. Your son Duryodhana sees everything in a strange light. When destruction is at hand, his mind is polluted by sin, and at that time evil then appears to be good. And that which is improper appears to him to be proper, and that which is proper appears otherwise to your son." Sitting alone with his secretary, Dhritarashtra listened sorrowfully to his secretary's words. Dhritarashtra knew they were moral and true. The king held his head as Sanjaya continued to speak. "By dragging the chaste and ascetic Panchali into the hall, the Kauravas, wretches that they are, have brought upon themselves wholesale destruction. Who else but Duryodhana and his wicked allies could have so abused Drupada's divinely born daughter, dragging her into the hall when she was wearing a single cloth and she was in her menses covered with blood? There she saw her husbands robbed of their wealth, kingdom, and even their royal dress, and they were forced into slavery. Bound by ties of virtue, the Pandavas were unable to exert their prowess. O king, the time will soon come when we will all see their power displayed." Dhritarashtra's voice faltered as he replied, "O Sanjay, Draupadi's pained glances can consume the whole world. What chance is there for even one of my sons to survive? All the Kuru women headed by Gandhari sent up a frightful wail when Dushasan sees Draupadi. Even now they weep along with my subjects. Enraged at Draupadi's persecution, the Brahmanas refuse to perform sacrifices. We see all around us fearful omens. It seems our destruction is near at hand. Surely this is the influence of all-powerful destiny. After speaking in this way for some time, the king dismissed Sanjaya and sat alone in his chamber throughout the entire night. The gambling match was simply replaying in his mind again and again. Part 4. Shonaka Rishi instructs Yudhishthira. The Pandavas left Hastinapur by the northern gate. Accompanied by a number of servants as they were leaving the city, and the crowds looked on and openly criticized the Kuru elders. While that wicked Duryodhan aspires to this kingdom, we are all lost. Our wealth, families, homes, even ourselves are all gone. Ruled by that sinful, malicious, avaricious man Duryodhan, who was aided only by other sinful men, we are but doomed. How can we find any happiness? Let us follow those virtuous heroes, the Pandavas, to the forest. A few citizens approached Yudhishthira. Where will you go, leaving us behind? We are distressed to learn of your defeat by sinful means. Take us with you. We do not wish to meet with destruction by living in the kingdom of a sinful king. By such association, we will be polluted by sin, whereas by associating with you, we will be uplifted to the highest level of virtue. Yudhishthira folded his palms and replied, "We are indeed blessed. As the people with the Brahmanas at their head, credit us with merits we do not possess. I, with all of my brothers, would ask you all to do one thing. For the sake of the love you bear for us, the king, along with our grandfather Bhishma, the wise Vidura, our mother Kunti, and our friends, they are all in Hastinapur. Please stay here and cherish them. Only this will satisfy me." The citizens cried out in pain. Sorrowfully, they unwillingly retraced their steps back into the city, thinking only of the Pandavas. When the citizens were gone, the Pandavas ascended their chariots and move toward the north. At dusk, they arrived on the bank of the Ganges. They found a great banyan tree known as Praman. They decided to spend the night there and thus dismounted their chariots and bathed in the Ganges. As darkness fell, the many Brahmins who had followed the brothers lit their sacred fires. Those fires cast an orange glow into the blackness of the night. Those holy rishis, sitting around the fire, chanting Vedic hymns in melodic tones, soothed the Pandavas. Surrounded by such self-realized soul, Yudhishthira and his brothers again shone resplendently, just like celestials in heaven. In the morning, the brothers prepared to enter the forest. They sat before the sacred fire and offered prayers to the gods in order to invoke auspiciousness Then they asked the Brahmins to bless them and allow them to leave. Yudhisthira spoke sorrowfully. We were robbed of our kingdom, wealth, and everything else we possessed. Oh, best of men, we will not be able to maintain you, as is our duty. In the forest, we will have to subsist on fruits and wild roots. The forest is also filled with dangerous beasts and serpents. Please, therefore, return to Hastinapur. The suffering of Brahmanas can overwhelm even the gods, what to speak of ourselves. I do not wish to be the cause of your poverty, O holy ones. The leader of the Brahmins, Shaunaka Rishi, replied, O king, we will go with you. Do not be anxious about how we will survive. We shall procure our own food and take great delight in an ascetic life. By our prayers and meditations, we shall do you good, and we shall keep you entertained with our recitations from the holy scriptures. I do not doubt that it must be as you say, replied Yudhisthira. I am always pleased to be in the company of Brahmanas, but now I am destitute. My brothers are anguished on my account, and I see myself as reproachable. How shall I now see you? You do not deserve to suffer, to subsist on food that you procure yourself. Alas! Fie upon Dhritarashtra's wicked sons! Yudhisthira sat and wept with his head in his hands. When he was in Indraprastha, he had maintained tens of thousands of Brahmins. Now he could not provide food for even a few. Seeing the king feeling so dejected, Shaunaka Rishi consoled him by speaking from the Vedas. A thousand causes of grief and 100 causes of fear overwhelm the ignorant day by day, but they never overwhelm those who are learned. O King, intelligent men like you are never cast into illusion. You cannot be bewildered by reverses. Knowing full well the eternal truths of the Vedas, bring that wisdom to mind now, O Yudhisthira. Shaunaka explained how the root of suffering is attachment to matter. As a fire in the hollow of a tree consumes the whole tree to its roots, so even a small attachment, if nurtured, can destroy a man. But one who has renounced attachment, even though living in the world, becomes free from evil passions and the suffering they produce. Yudhisthira listened attentively, taking delight in the knowledge he had heard spoken so many times. He never tired of hearing it. Shaunaka told him that desire for wealth and opulence, which could never be alleviated, is man's worst enemy. The highest happiness comes from contentment, while the struggle for wealth, fame, followers, and the association of loved ones is the cause of bondage and the cause of ultimate pain. Therefore, O King, you should not covet anything. Do not desire to accumulate wealth, even for virtuous purposes. It is better never to have touched mud than to wash it off after being covered in it. If you wish to acquire virtue, then free yourself from all desires for wealth. Yudhishthira was puzzled. O Rishi, I do not desire anything for myself. I only wish to have enough wealth to support the Brahmanas. What use is there in leading a householder's life if one cannot cherish and support one's dependents? Is it not the duty of a householder to maintain both his family members, the brahmacharis and renunciants? So too should a householder welcome guests and travelers. This is said to be the path to religious merit. What is your opinion, O most learned Brahman? Alas, this world is full of contradictions. That which makes the good and honest ashamed pleases the wicked. Moved by ignorance and passion, men simply act to gratify their stomachs and sex organs. When the senses come in contact with their objects, a desire springs up in the heart to enjoy those objects. Blinded by desire, men become absorbed in following the dictates of the senses, which they mistake for real happiness. Shonaka then explained how even pious men may be overpowered by desires when associating with the world and its enjoyable objects. Yudhishthira had already achieved success in his householder life. Now, without attachment or material desire, he should concentrate on his practice of yoga and austerity in order to attain full spiritual success. By his spiritual power, Yudhishthira would then be able to support the Brahmanas. Part 5. Surya gives Yudhishthira a mystical plate. Yudhishthira thanked the Rishi for his instructions, which he said he would surely follow. Then, still desiring to find the means by which he could maintain those ascetics who wished to accompany him in the forest, the king asked Domya's advice. O great sage, I cannot abandon these Brahmins, but at the same time I have no power to provide for them. What should I do? Domya reflected on Yudhishthira's question for some time. Then he replied, long, long ago, all created beings were afflicted by hunger. Thereupon, Lord Surya took compassion upon them. Drawing up water with his rays, he stayed over the earth. Then the moon, by his cooling powers, converted the resultant vapors into clouds. Then rain fell. By the combination of sun and rain, food was brought forth from the earth. Thus, all beings are actually supported by the sun. O King, take shelter of the sun god, and then you will be able to fulfill your purposes. Domya explained to Yudhishthira how the great kings of the past and all protected and delivered their subjects by virtue of their own ascetic meditation and vows. The Pandava immediately understood. In order to secure the means to support the Brahmins, he must worship the sun god with an ascetic vow. Thus he asked the sage what means he should follow. Daumya instructed Yudhisthira in the 108 names of the sun, as well as the Vedic prayers he should recite. Yudhisthira then entered the Ganges. He stood facing the sun and offered numerous prayers and worship to its deity. He took neither food nor water for several days and controlled his breathing through the process of pranayama yoga. Renouncing even sleep, the king continuously praised the sun god from the waters of the Ganges. Three days later, the blazing sun god appeared before Yudhisthira. He then said, "I am pleased with your prayers and austerities, O King. You shall get all that you desire. I shall provide you with food for the 12 years of your exile in the forest." The sun god gave to Yudhisthira a large copper plate with the following instruction. Whence Panchali has cooked the meal, she should place the food on this dish. That food will then be inexhaustible in quantity, up until the time when she herself eats. You can thus feed any number of men from this plate, O King. The sun god then rose into the sky and vanished. Before leaving, he added, "You will regain your kingdom 14 years from now." Yudhisthira came out of the river with the plate and took hold of Daumya's feet in worship. In great happiness, he embraced his brothers and then handed the mystical plate to Draupadi. She immediately cooked the meal and placed it upon the sacred dish. After offering the food to the Supreme Lord with the appropriate prayers, Draupadi served the Brahmins. To her amazement and delight, she saw that as she served from the plate, the food was immediately replenished. It was only when she took her own meal after serving her husband's that she saw the dish finally empty. When they had eaten, the Pandavas, blessed by auspicious rites and Vedic prayers, set out for the forest of Kamyaka, accompanied by hundreds of Brahmanas. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarane Trinadapi Sunichena Tarariva Sahishnuna Manina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Harenama 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 Eva Kevalam Kalao Nastyeva 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 Gatir Anyata Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.